Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike to tell you along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Orchards, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Herb and I will be here until 4:30 this afternoon, and then we'll give the handoff to the LSU Radio Network pregame. And then at 6:30 kickoff, LSU Ole Miss, and we want to thank our presenting sponsor also, Map Construction. That's Map right. Built, Build Beyond. Herb, this is one of those games in the season. This is, man, when you think about those hot summer days that you're doing conditioning drills and you running and you lifting weights and you practicing on your own, these are the moments against a team like Ole Miss. This is why you do all that. Now, you might say you do it for every game, but no, this is a little bit special because of the history with these two teams the Southeast Conference and their long history. Man, my dad, my grandpa, they would always talk about those LSU Ole Miss games of the 50s and 60s. So this is why you do all this. A lot of excitement here. We had a full crowd here at lunchtime, a little bit kind of filtered out, but we still got a nice real crowd here at Acme, but man, everybody was all kind of pumped up. We had a lot of Ole Miss fans here at lunchtime, but Herb, it's one of those games. Alabama's one, but Ole Miss is another.
That's right. You know, it's, and I've talked about this in the past. Go Tigers, you're right.
There
we
you
talked
go.
About this in the past. You know, there's a lot of people from the Louisiana, the state of Louisiana. I know a lot of people from the city of New Orleans who's actually gone to Ole Miss.
Oh, and the kids have.
The kids have.
Same thing on the bayou.
I have friends now whose kids are at Ole Miss. And so it's such a close-knit, tied game as far as when it comes to people and family, the people of Mississippi, people of Louisiana, people who's from Louisiana going to Mississippi. So I think that brings a little bit of nostalgia to the game, and it makes it larger than what it is. But this Ole Miss game has always been a circled game on the schedule for LSU football, period. Even when I played, I just remember being very close. I guess the talent level was really close all the time. And today's game is not changed a bit, too. I think it's the same. I think that you have two really great quarterbacks that's going to be going against each other, both of which have a lot of history playing football in the SEC. When it comes to Nussmeier, not actually playing, but being and sitting and watching and understanding what SEC football is about. But with Jackson Dart, you know, coming over from USC and then playing with Lane Kiffin now, this is his third year, I think. And so he knows the landscape of the SEC football. And in my opinion, Jackson Dart is one of these special quarterbacks. I think he can run the ball. He can throw the ball. He has great leadership skills.
He ain't no small dude.
Everybody likes him. He's got good size.
Guy.
Yep, all of that stuff. So when you start talking about this game, you know, I'm excited for it. You know, last week or 2 weeks ago, I was really excited when Ole Miss lost.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just because I just don't like Ole Miss. Now, I do like Lane Kiffin, but I don't like Ole Miss. That's kind of my, you know, one of the – and it's not that I don't like Ole Miss. I just like beating Ole Miss. That's it. So, it's a beautiful thing. So, it's going to be interesting to watch, and it's going to be a really great game. And I think the fans are going to get a lot out of this game today because you got two really formidable teams that's going to be going up against each other. And Ole Miss is ranked higher than LSU, but I really think they're kind of the same team. I think they both are really, you know, number seven, number six maybe in the country type teams when they can play at their best level. Let's call it that.
You look at the coaches, both are from the offensive side, the football, but they do it differently. You know, with Lane, and I think he gets a bad rap at times, of that he doesn't run the football, because the last 2 years they ran the football more than any other team in the SEC.
That's right.
But the reputation of him being a bit of a riverboat gambler, throwing the ball all over the field, okay, that part is true. But he also runs the ball. You look at Brian Kelly, what his reputation was at Notre Dame. It wasn't about throwing the ball. It was about running the football. Now he got some different quarterbacks here at LSU instead of at Notre Dame. And the receiving core, they both offensive style coaches, but they do it differently.
Yep.
But between the two, the styles are different, and the personalities
completely
are really different.
Well, you know, Coach Kelly tries to turn on a little bit of Southern charm when he can. But just be you, Coach. It's okay. It's okay to be a little bit.
As long as you win, I could care less.
That's all that matters. And I don't think anybody else in Louisiana cares, as long as you win. But, you know, when you talk about Lane Kiffin, he's one of those fun guys, and he's been around the world. He's been in places you and I only dreamed to be, with his dad as a coach in the league for a long time. So when you talk about what his knowledge of the game is, in my opinion, I think that he has an understanding of what defenses are trying to do to offenses before he becomes an offensive-minded coach, if that makes sense. So I think he's learned how to be a really great offensive coach by understanding defenses and more of a deeper substance than any other coach, in my opinion, because he grew up in a household where his dad was literally probably the best defensive-minded coach in the league for 15 years and has the records to show for it. So, and that being said, you know, with Coach Kelly is one of those guys. He's just, you know, he's just been a grinder. He learned a lot from not only his own coaching experience, but watching other coaches that he grew up under as well. But, you know, being in that Northwest, Northeast, really, side of the country, and coaching is a lot different than what it is in the South. So now he knows the talent that he can get. Now it's time to just sling the rock all over the field. But I think there's a reason why we're doing that, is because we haven't found that true running back, which we're now hoping that we found that guy. And so now you can see trying to run the football a little bit more now moving into the second half of the season is going to be vital to LSU's remaining season.
I remember at SC, Pete Carroll's the head coach.
Yep.
Coach O is assistant head coach, defensive line coach, recruiting coordinator. Lane was the receivers coach. Steve Sarkisian was the quarterback's coach. Mm-hmm. Norm Chow was the offensive coordinator back then. So, man.
That's why they were who they were.
Man, that's why they were hoisting them, them national championships.
That's right.
They knew how to do it. And so. But I know Coach O always told me, Mike, I know. I've been against a lot of offensive coordinators. Lane's the best play caller I've ever went up against as a coach.
So does he think Lane is better than Steve Sarkisian?
He said Lane was the best.
Okay. I like Lane. Lane is one of those guys where
– Now, he knew Lane and Coach Saban wouldn't hit it off well at times because they're both hard-headed. They won't want to do things their own way.
Well, you know, the thing about, I think, with that situation is Coach Saban is the guy that you have to at least put a little bit of guardrails on with. If you're Lane Kiffin, right, I got to have some guardrails.
But I think he changed Nick. He forced him to change and be more of a passing offense.
So what I was going to say is when you get inside of those guardrails, now I know the rules of the game. Now, how can I manipulate the game enough to be able to play it a little bit teetering on those lines, right? And I think that's what Lane did, and I think that's why you saw the success that Steve had as well when he came in after Lane. And so I think that Lane Kiffin has a knack for connecting with people. And that's something special that you have when you're a leader, when you're a coach, when you have – the ability to be able to bring people into your world, but not just that, but also take their world and incorporate it in yours and then make them great or greater than what they are. And that's the thing that I think Lane has when it comes to players and coaches that coach for him, players that play for him, and then the people that are around the program. I think those people are connecting with him. That's why, you know, you go to Ole Miss and you think, like, he's got Ole Miss on a national level. He really does. Like, people were looking at it.
We weren't talking about that.
No one was. But he's doing that. If Lane was at a little bit larger school, he would be in a whole nother world. Trust me. I think that he could. He's a guy that connects with, like, kind of like the little bit of opposite of Brian Kelly. He does not connect that well with a lot of people. And it's not that he's not trying. It's not for a lack of effort. But I think it's just because people don't find what he does interesting because he's just straightforward. This is what I am. This is what I do. Whereas Lane's cracking jokes. He's got his dog out there. He's he can go and mingle with the quarterback. He can go mingle with the receiver and hang out with those. Well, Coach Kelly's not doing that. You know what I mean? So it's just different. So, but we look forward to a day when Coach Kelly turns into somewhat of a Lane Kiffin and continues to dance with players on the video. So,
well, I don't think you'll be seeing that anytime soon. But with 43 seconds left, South Carolina scores a touchdown, makes it 27-25 Alabama. The two-point conversion they did not hit on.
Nope.
So with 43 seconds left, Alabama 27, South Carolina 25. So unless South Carolina can get an onside kick here, looks as though the Tide will squeak out a win against the Gamecocks in Tuscaloosa. And, man, this is back-to-back weeks now. Alabama fans ain't happy. They'll be happy with the W, but, today was difficult for them. And defensively, man, Alabama's got a lot of problems in the secondary here, a lot.
It reminds me of a home team by the name of LSU of a year ago, at least. It's a thing, right? If you're not coaching these guys up, if you're trying to overcomplicate things, this is what you get. But it doesn't seem like that. It seems like it's just the fact of the matter is that Alabama's DBs are just not there. They're not on the same level as they once were.
You lost a first-round pick, DB, and Terrion Arnold.
Yep.
He's with the Lions. Kool-Aid McKinstry, second-round pick. He's with the Saints.
Yep.
Then they had a transfer dude who was a freshman All-American. He goes to Ohio State.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, again, this is why I always argue about this next man up.
Yeah.
It depends on who that next man is. Don't have nobody in that caliber to replace three guys and two of them in the National Football League.
No, right, and that's a difficult thing. And at the end of the day, it's one. Oh, look. Oh, Miss,
oh
they got it.
Goodness.
South Carolina got the ball.
On an onside kick, it looks as though
South Carolina
has recovered with 40 seconds left in the game. And this may be setting up a scenario very similar to when South Carolina played LSU.
Right.
Remember, they had the kicker set up for the game-time field goal, and he pushed that babe a little bit left on here. The ball bouncing around the field. Alabama had a couple shots at it, and then South Carolina comes up with the recovery.
It was nice.
You couldn't script it up better because of the way it kind of rocked around a little bit on the field. And now South Carolina is going to have an opportunity here to win in Alabama. Ooh,
so if they win in Alabama, the goalposts in Alabama might travel
well,
down
they'll
the street.
Survive.
No, they might travel down the street, and they might just get tossed away and say, we're done with football for the season.
Too bad we didn't do that game last week.
That's right.
Vanderbilt was playing Alabama.
Fun. Oh, that
because they
great.
Finally had to fish that babe out of the river.
Out of the river. That was the
and
most...
then they cut it up selling pieces for NIL. Man, that would have been something I'd have thought of.
That's right. $2.50
I'd have got a lot more than that. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike D'Antilia along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. They got great food and drink specials. Jason and the crew will take real good care of you here at Acme Oyster. We'll be back right after this break. We're back here in our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike D'Antilia along with the legendary Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Want to thank Acme Oyster House and also our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. The game just ended. Alabama holds on 27-25. They got a little bit of pressure on Sellers on a third down play.
Yeah.
And he threw the ball up. Looked like a ball had helium in it.
Didn't know what he was doing.
Man, I could have caught that one playing center field. It went up in the air. Alabama makes the interception and ends up winning it 27-25. Talk about a nail biter. And we've seen Sellers with those throws. He did some similar stuff against LSU. Just kind of put the ball up there and it gets picked off. South Carolina played hard today. I give them credit. And their defense got after Milroe pretty good. But Alabama comes out with the victory, 27-25. Milroe throws for a little over 200 yards today. But that two-minute throw with 2 minutes left, everybody's jammed up on the line of scrimmage thinking they're going to run it. And, man, he makes a throw pop right over the top, gets a touchdown, and that basically kind of sealed it.
Well, you know, South Carolina is a game that we know – or a team that we know all too well and how they played against LSU. LSU squeaked out a victory against them earlier in the season. And it's South Carolina is one of those teams where they're going to be tough. They're going to play you tough every play, every minute, every second. The problem is they just don't know how to finish.
And they're not a good closer.
No, we saw that against LSU because they had LSU on the ropes. And there was no reason for LSU to win that game. But same thing right now with Alabama. But Alabama is struggling.
Whew.
And it started the second half of the Georgia game. Remember, they were up big in the first half. Second half, Georgia comes storming back. And then all of a sudden, last week against Vanderbilt, you know, Alabama plays like, you know, really subpar football, if you want to call it that. And but Vanderbilt's not a pushover. Let's call it that, too. So it's tough to go to Vanderbilt this year in 2024 and come out with a huge win, no matter who you are. But they should have beaten Vanderbilt.
But they don't have the most important position on the field locked up, quarterback, South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina, they have two quarterbacks that can run the ball very, very well. That's it.
Throwing it.
They can't throw the football. They can't finish the game. They can't. There's another dimension to the quarterback position that they're not able to do right now. So, but they're gonna be all right. But Alabama is the one that I'm really, because you know they were number one going into the game last week. They did not look like a number one ranked team last week, and this week they don't look like a top 10, top 5 team either.
No, they don't.
So it's going to be interesting. So which leads me to believe as LSU continues to play and grow, as we've been seeing the progression that they've gone under every week. They lost against USC. They came back to play South Carolina. They could have lost that game, but they won the game. They found a way to win the game. And in every other game that they've played, they've been really, you know, outmatched the other team, if you will. So today is the day.
We'll find out a lot about Blake Baker's defense today.
Today is the day to find out if they've really taken the next step in this season, just this season, to see where we're going to end up at it then.
Okay, we'll get into this a little bit more as the show goes along, but the wide receiving core has sort of been really diminished now. Doesn't look like Chris Hilton. He's going to be playing. C.J. Daniels is hurt now. This is a either squat or get off the pot moment for Shelton Sampson.
Yeah.
And listen, Shelton got talent. I don't think anybody would question that Shelton Sampson has talent. But he's got to be able to gain some confidence as a player. And we saw the last time, you know, Coach Kelly wanted to hand him the baton and said, go out there and make something happen. And then he makes a couple of mistakes, and you could read Coach Kelly's lips. Hey, you want to play or what? You tell me. But this is his moment tonight that he has an opportunity, and we'll talk about certainly the growth of Aaron Anderson and Zevin Thomas in this offense along with Kyron. But Herb, to me, this is a moment that Shelton's got to grab kind of the bull by the horns.
Well, every moment is that moment, right? Because every opportunity you get, you should be trying.
But he ain't done it yet.
He hasn't. So let's be real. If that's the case, do you really expect it to happen today? Now, you want it and you need it to happen today based upon injuries and things of that nature. But sometimes the light bulb just doesn't click
at all.
And sometimes it just doesn't click at the right time. So that's why it was really interesting to see Aaron Anderson step up, Mason Taylor step up his game and become what he's become, Daniels as well. And these guys are playing really great football. Now it's time for your Shelton Sampson to step up. In my mind, the way that he steps up is you get him some quick passes. Don't ask for anything that's, you know, where he has to think about, read defenses and, you know, either curl up or come across the field or cut out or whatever the situation may be. Get him some simple stuff, some quick hitches or maybe something down low where you're throwing the ball up to him as an alley-oop type of thing. You get him some confidence so you can gain some confidence when you get on the field. I think that's how you get him going. So outside of that, if you're trying to get him to think about all this, maybe his head's swirling and he can't utilize his athletic ability to be who he is wanting, who we're wanting him to be on the field. So at this point, I think it's going to be a chess match for the coach, you know, from the play caller to the quarterback to Sampson. How do we just get him involved? Now, outside of that, now, here's another thing. How do we get our running backs involved in the passing game?
Throw the ball to Caden Durham.
Right.
I know he can catch it.
He can catch the football. You get him the ball. If you're running out receivers, then you got some running backs and you got two other tight ends that can catch the ball, and they're tall as I don't know what. And those guys deserve to get in the mix as well.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler here at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. Hey, we'll have a lot more Tiger talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. Come on by and visit us. We're about a mile away from Tiger Stadium, so if you're in the area, stop on by. They got a lot of great food, drink specials here. Jason and the crew do an outstanding job taking care of everybody
here. Yes,
they
do.
Each and every week. And we also want to thank our presenting sponsor, Map Construction. Couldn't do it without them, and Herb knows a lot about Map Construction.
That's right.
But we ain't got a whole lot of time to talk about Map right now. But we're into our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health Systems, totally focused on patient care. And on our Open Heart Jewelers talk and text line from the Rebel Walk, we have Leanne Herring. Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your time this afternoon. And Herb and I were talking about this. This is why you lift all those weights and do all that stuff in the off season to get yourself in shape for games like this. This game's been circled on the calendar for both teams for quite some time and for a large number of years. So that is something special still about LSU Ole Miss.
You're exactly right. Like I said, I said it on our show on Tuesday. You know, make no mistake about it. This, in my opinion, is a game that's going to be a playoff game. And if you guys caught South Carolina, Alabama, that came to the wire. You know that they are packing up and everything ready to get out. My goodness, talk about that. South Carolina playing that Beamer ball, but Alabama skating away. I think that tonight in Death Valley, it's going to be no different. That, you know, I really think it's going to become a line of scrimmage battle along with the quarterback pressure. I mean, offensively, LSU gets really creative, Mike, and they're great at getting mismatches with counters, utilizing their guard, their tackle, and their tight end. And LSU loves to run this unbalanced set to see how this defense reacts. And the question is, how can the defense react? Because at Ole Miss, because LSU is going to probably be the one of the best offenses that they've played as of late. You got to remember, I mean, you guys know this. LSU has big athletic skills, offensive line. They like to pull out of the backside. They do a great job in their RPO. And, I talk about the tight end play, and I think that this is going to be a really big thing, especially when you're the LSU offense trying to get, you know, Jackson Dart, unsettled, but more than likely this Ole Miss defense. I think that we're going to have a difficult time as far as the LSU offense and, you know, going head-to-head on our defense is those exit flat routes and those concepts that LSU likes to utilize with the tight end. Like I said, the Tigers do a great job in the RPO, and I think those late leaks out, the tight end is going to come into big play here. And, of course, you know, putting pressure on Dart on that, coming on the LSU defense. But I think that offensively, LSU gets really creative, and I think that it's going to be a challenge defensively for Ole Miss to get to the plate. They have a lot of playmakers. We know Walter Nolan, Centarian Perkins, you know, Princely will be back. But, again, this LSU offense, starting at the offensive line, and some of the playmakers, as you guys know, are difficult. And Kelly likes to get real creative. So it's going to be an interesting matchup on this one.
Leanne, Trey Harris, and we go back a few years, Trey. I saw him when he was the quarterback at Como High School, and he was throwing the ball to a dude that was pretty good, too, Malik Nabers.
Malik Nabers.
That was a pretty good combination. But, you know, when he came out of high school, he was not a super highly recruited guy. He was sort of a B-list guy for a lot of schools, and he goes to Louisiana Tech, and he goes through the transition of option quarterback to being a receiver. And by the time he had decided he was going to leave Louisiana Tech, he had everybody after him but one school. That was LSU. They got in a little bit late to talk to him, but LSU really didn't press the issue, because I think had they done it, Trey would have went to LSU. But they didn't get involved heavily. And I know in speaking to him, he said, I wanted to go somewhere where they were going to throw the football a lot. I knew about Coach Kiffin's reputation. And he said, I thought Ole Miss gave me the best opportunity to flourish, and it has. And I knew one thing. When it was listed as questionable Monday, I knew damn well he going to play Saturday. Trey, I don't care if he's got to drag that leg or whatever, he's going to play because of what it means to him, a Louisiana guy playing in Tiger Stadium, going up against LSU, against a team that I think deep down inside he really wanted to play for, but they didn't give him that option. And sometimes, Leanne, we all know this. God puts you in the right place at the right time.
The right time.
And I think it was the right time for Trey to go to Ole Miss. And he talk a little bit about his development, what you've seen over the last 2 years. Because he could have come out early for the draft if he wanted to.
You know, I was talking with a lot of, you know, other people in media and, you know, just kind of, you know, kids like Trey Harris. Like you said, you see him all the time. They go to other places. They haven't really reached their level. But, you know that when they go to the, I always call it the right fit. And for Trey Harris, Ole Miss is definitely the right fit where he could come to develop. And I think it speaks volume along with Trey Harris and a lot of other players that that could have hit the portal or, you know, hit the portal or, you know, made their way to the NFL. But they decided to stay because this pro mindset that Lane Kiffin and his staff have really built here and the culture they have really built here has really, you know, trickled down to these athletes wanting to stay and wanting to develop because they know what they can become at Ole Miss. You know, Trey Harris was, like you said, not the most sought after recruit, but a lot of those times, those kids I find in the recruiting, you know, recruiting trail, those are the kids that often pan out the most because they have a different kind of grit about them and they haven't reached the ceilings yet. And their willingness to work. And like you said, Trey being questionable, I wouldn't, this is a game that I believe we're going to see Trey Harris. I don't think he's going to miss this one for a lot of reasons. They're going to have to drag him out without him getting some playing time. So I definitely believe that Trey Harris it'll be a game time situation. I don't know if we'll see as much of him because, of course, you know, Ole Miss has its picking and choosing a lot of offensive weapons, and I'm sure we'll see a lot of it. I do believe that Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. will go with what we saw at South Carolina is trying to have a better ball distribution, especially having to go against, you know, try to control this ball game early and not let it get too far away from them or have to play catch up. Because, like I said, you know, LSU defense does have its holes and whatnot. But like I said, you got to talk about this LSU offense. I mean, I was at Duncanville last night watching Duncanville DeSoto, and I know that freshman running back y'all have out there. Seeing him a couple times, Caden Durno, I know he was questionable to see if he was going to be. But, I mean, what he's done, he's been another young playmaker for Brian Kelly that's just been outstanding, which should be no surprise. You almost look past the size and everything because everything else. So it'll be interesting to see if he's back in the game today because he could be another – he could create a lot of chaos on the offense for this Ole Miss defense, especially those linebackers in the back trying to escape away from his agility and his speed if he does play today for LSU.
Well, Leanne, you know, we talked a lot about Ole Miss's offense and Lane Kiffin, and that's what all the talk is always about. But my question is, how does – Ole Miss's defense stop a very, what I like to call, a potent LSU passing game? You know, Nussmeier's been just nothing less than phenomenal, in my opinion, being able to distribute the ball to different players and leading this team in the direction that they're in. So, you know, coming into this game, I think that Ole Miss is looking to do everything they can to stop Nussmeier in that passing game. How do you think they go about doing that?
You know, I think that the secondary is going to be really instrumental in this. We know that LSU loves to run a lot of unbalanced in motion and keep their defense off their toes. The Tigers are just really good schematically at that. And again, I say this with all due respect. We're the top defense in the country, but again, we haven't had quite a test like we have had against LSU and put the rivalry, put all those intangibles in that. But I do think that our offensive line, you know, has to stay on track for this one. The Ole Miss offensive line and the defensive line are both, it's going to be a game of trenches. I know that you're talking about how we break down that LSU offense. I think it's just having the control and spread the ball and make sure that we put a lot of man-to-man and try to put Nussmeier and get him in that quarterback, you know, put under pressure because he's thrown for 61%, like you said, and he has a lot of weapons, a lot of assets. But we also have seen, you know, him have trouble on not being able to take care of the ball. So I think for Ole Miss, as far as the defense, the secondary is going to have to come up big in this one. They're going to have to win those the turnover battles, and I've been talking about it, is the third and longs and trying to get similar to what LSU will do with Jackson Dart, is trying to get Jackson Dart in those third and longs. I feel like Ole Miss will try to do the same with the LSU offense and trying to slow them down. But I do believe whoever wins the line of scrimmage battle in this one and also the quarterback battle with the fewest mistakes is going to have a good shot of coming out of Death Valley one way or another with the win in this one. But again, I do believe it's going to be a very tight-knit low scoring game because you got an excellent LSU offense. I'm going to guess one of the top defenses in the country. But again, something's got to give. It's just a matter of who's going to play better ball in this one.
Leanne, one of the guys that and looks as though it has been trending that he probably will play. I think it's a difference maker up front, and that's Princely Umanmielen, the defensive end who we got to see play at Florida. And he no question, last year, he was Florida's best defensive player. It wasn't even close there. And it's his ability to affect the quarterback. Sometimes it's not does he get a sack or a tackle for a loss, but his presence, I hate to say it, almost like an odor. I mean, you know it's there. And you're cognizant of it every time he's out on the field. That's a big difference to me defensively if Princely's playing or he doesn't because of his pass rush ability.
And I'm glad you brought Princely up. You know, whether it's a game time situation, of course, right now it's a game time decision. We had some Samarian Perkins, you know, really step up. But the pass rush is another key thing that's going to be key in this game. And I do believe that we saw a lot better. We saw a lot better improvement with the pass rush against South Carolina. But again, this is not that South Carolina is by no means the same level at that LSU will be playing up. So the Ole Miss is definitely going to have to clean up the pass rush tonight. And, you know, but like you said, Princely is just a present. When he gets there, he's going to make plays. They're going to be challenged on those underneath routes, especially the way that LSU loves to run those deep routes, opening the underneath stuff. So they're going to have to put pressure on the linebacker coverage. But, again, I think if Princely plays and then, like, we have a lot of other players, that's the one thing I think that has been key for Ole Miss coming into the game that we haven't had in past years. We have depth on both sides of the ball. We're playing, you know, very balanced ball. But it won't be any easier. I just think that we have a better footing and a better team that we brought into Death Valley in a long time. And it's going to be a close one. And, you know, we got to think about this. We talked about the atmosphere. Ole Miss has 50 kids on that roster that have never played in a game of this magnitude. And some of them may get this opportunity tonight. You know, playing at, you guys know, playing at that kind of stadium puts a whole nother dynamic on already into the intensity of this game. So another opportunity where, you know, that both these teams are going to try to create a chaos, not just on the field, but trying to get, opposing offense, you know, off their track and off their guard, you know, and get them off their mind and play mind games with them, basically, you know, because of this is going to be that kind of pressure situation. But I do believe, you know, we're going to see a lot. The special teams have really dictated the outcome of this game historically, and I believe that special teams will also be a deciding factor and at the outcome of this game too as well, because I really do believe that this is going to be a different kind of game than we saw last year. It's going to be a lot closer, and it could get really ugly really fast.
Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. I'm glad you brought up special teams, because keep an eye out on the zero for LSU, Zaven Thomas, who has come close, and I mean real close, a couple times of breaking a punt return for a touchdown.
Yep.
And so you, eventually when you hit it a couple times and you don't quite get it, eventually it happens.
Yep.
And so that's something for the Rebels. They're going to have to be cognizant of. LSU in the past, it had been a lot of fair catches. It hadn't been the run backs. But number zero, Zaven Thomas, he gives them a different element. And the guy was a guy that, in covering Ole Miss, you know that he was at Mississippi State for a couple of years. He's made quite an impact in the return game for LSU.
No, like you said, the Rebs are going to have to be of sound mind in this one, just because of the way LSU is coming in. They're playing on their turf at home. And like we said, this game historically is one of the most underrated rivalries at night. But I do believe that special teams historically have dictated how this one's going to go. So this may be the night that might happen on either side. So I do believe that special teams, if it comes down to the wire, will be a key deciding factor, aside from the quarterback battle and winning that line of scrimmage in the battle in the trenches.
Leanne, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Hey, I saw you took a picture with a dude from from DeSoto High School. He's 6'8". 350 pounds. Okay, and he's going to Syracuse? Well, I guess they got name, image, likeness in New York, too. They got money up there. So, man, I took a look at that.
Yeah,
goodness.
No, he's a really great kid. He's really sound leader. I mean, he's got his own security. It's really quite funny. I've seen him, you know, I've known that kid a while, and, you know, he's got his own security. The opposing teams are always taking pictures of him. But, yes, I told him, you know, it gets a little cold on the East Coast, so if you ever want to come to a sunny place, there's always room to sit for him. But yes, no, there is a lot, like you talk about a presence. You mentioned it, and he came to mind when, you talked about Princely. You see Byron Washington, and he is that presence. I think that that opposing defensive line that has to face him every week, even if it's high school football and top teams in high school, there's their offensive line, and then there's Byron Washington, you know, a man amongst kids, you know, and it's hard to believe that he's just a, you know, he's a senior, so, but a really, really great kid and everything. But yes, he's going to Syracuse, but thank God for the transfer portal, because I don't know if he can quite, I don't know how that snow's going to treat him after a while. He might miss Dallas a little bit after that. But no, great game, and, you know, Duncanville, DeSoto, Duncanville remains number one. It was a close one. Keelan Russell, of course, Alabama commit, who everybody is still after. Did a phenomenal job leading his team to that victory over DeSoto last night.
Yeah, I do know those checks clear from New York, so it's all good. And again, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time, and always do a great job. Thank you
That's
so much.
Right. Yes.
Thank you so much. Hotty
toddy. All righty. It's a wrap on our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodeau Regional Health System. I'll let her get that hottie tie.
Yeah, you know, I was about to say
come
something.
Come on, I'll let her get it in.
She's lucky we like it, but no hottie tie. Let's go Tigers, baby. Okay, my bad.
I'll let her get it in. That was brought to you by Thibodeau Regional Health System, focused on patient care. We'll be back to finish it up here in our number one of our Tiger Tailgating Show. Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, right here from Acme Oyster That's House right. in Baton Rouge. We'll be back. Finishing up here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, Mike DeTella along with Herb Tyler, our number one. Hey, we're here till 4:30 this afternoon. Come on by and visit us. We're at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road. A lot of LSU Ole Miss talk. Come on by and visit us, or keep your dial tuned in to the Big 878 WWL. We'll be back with more Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating right after this news break.